It's been 20 years. Iconic guests.
My guest is Danica Patrick.
I mean, you've been doing this for 17 years. You might be the OG of podcasts.
We all know this gentleman. Let's give David Stern a big round of applause. In 2004, we launched Sports Business Radio, and David was kind enough to be my first guest. He was just joking in the green room that he launched my career. So.
He hasn't let me go since. It's really impossible.
My guest is Emmett Smith. I think being authentic, being who you are, and being unapologetic about it, and being open to receive knowledge in areas that you may be unaware of, that's okay too.
My guest is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver.
International growth is something that I'm always thinking a lot about, and both for the NBA and for the game. And it's a recognition that nothing is preordained.
My guest is Bob Costas.
You know, Brian, as you said, I've been so lucky and did so many things that I could never even have dreamed of doing. All I really want to do now is return to the things that are most truthful to me as a person and a professional.
The biggest names in sports.
My guest is Maria Sharapova.
I wanted to be in those rooms and I wanted to be in those meetings because there was something inside of me that said that although tennis was a big part of my life, it wasn't going to be my life in capital letters. And I had to become savvy and smart. A big part of sport is business.
Our guest this week, Sue Bird.
Who told you I'm a bowler? That's hilarious.
I read that you're like a good bowler and you break 200 when you bowl. Is that not true? Is that false media report?
No. That's all fact.
Welcome to year 20 of Sports Business Radio. Now, here's your host, Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for joining us on this edition of Sports Business Radio. Great guest again for you this week, Brett Rapkin, the founder of Podium Pictures. He's going to join us to discuss his latest media project, Dinners with DeMar, featuring Chicago Bulls star DeMar DeRozan interviewing athletes such as Draymond Green, Damian Lillard, and Dwayne Wade about the importance of mental health and navigating life off the basketball court. Rapkin has also produced documentaries and docuseries that include sports stars Michael Phelps, Steve Nash, Bodie Miller, Carmelo Anthony, Shaun White, Candace Parker, and Michaela Schifrin. Rapkin discusses the crowded athlete content space, the importance of shining a spotlight on mental health for athletes, and how his 501c3 is funding the media projects that he's producing. I think you'll find this conversation fascinating, and we'll get to that in segment three. In our next segment, Sports Business Radio co-founder Keith Foreman is going to join me to discuss the bizarre story around Los Angeles Dodgers superstar Shohei Ohtani and gambling allegations made against his longtime friend and interpreter. This story has many layers to it. We peel back some of those layers and tell you what may lie ahead and how this story will impact Major League Baseball, the Dodgers, sports gambling, and even how elite athletes manage their finances in the future. That's coming up. I want to remind you, go back and listen to some of our recent conversations. We've had some great guests, as always, Greg Maddux, Gracie Gold, Brian Windhorst, John Orrand, some great guests recently. So I encourage you to go back into the Sports Business Radio archives and listen to this conversation. If you're not subscribing to our podcast, please do. Just hit the plus sign in the upper right-hand corner of Apple Podcasts. I'm joined by executive producer Brian Griggs. Griggs, how are you?
Doing great. And you mentioned some of those highlight shows we've had the last couple of months. And yeah, the content is great. We have some awesome guests. And, you know, it's a moving world in sports business. So there's always new content that we're discovering from these guests and from, everybody we have on. Just like you said today, we've got the whole bizarre Shohei Ohtani story with Keith and then Brett. You know, he's doing some great work and producing some awesome content, some great docs. So it's fun. Keep listening. We always have something fun and something informative on every week.
I'll give a quick plug here for Morgan Stanley Global Sports and Entertainment. They're all about providing financial literacy to athletes. And we don't know exactly what's happened here with Shohei Ohtani, as we'll discuss with Keith Foreman in our next segment. But it's so important that athletes know where their money is. Don't trust a financial advisor. Don't trust a friend. Don't trust an interpreter. Don't even trust a family member. You should have an idea of where your money is, how much you have, and what it's doing at all times. And Morgan Stanley Global Sports and Entertainment is really doing a great job, even starting at the high school level with these athletes getting NIL money at the high school level, helping them become financially literate. I know someone like Shohei Ohtani is super busy, has a lot of moving parts in his life, but as we'll discuss, to have wire transfers made in the amount of $500,000 in a chunk, and you're saying you didn't know about those things and that your money was stolen, that's a big problem. If it's $100, okay. You know, if someone Venmo'd money to someone, but like $500,000, Griggs, you and I are pretty good friends. Pretty sure we don't have access to each other's bank accounts. I'm pretty sure if I was sending money from your account, you'd get an alert that would go off saying, hey, someone other than you is trying to send money from your account. So that's one of the layers of the story that I think people find so unbelievable. Like, how did this interpreter have access to this amount of money? And not Ohtani nor no one else on his team seemingly was notified that these transfers were being made.
Yeah, it's just a bizarre story. And you're right. Like, you'd think you'd know, especially if it's that kind of money. But I'm excited to, I know I haven't listened to your Keith interview yet, but I'm excited to hear how you guys dig into it, because there's so many layers to it. And the press conference yesterday was wild, having the new interpreter there. And it's just like, man, this story just keeps unfolding. And he's such an iconic athlete. It's not like it's, you know, the 12th guy on the bench. It's like the star of baseball and has been for the last couple seasons. So it's big news.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to the interview with Keith Foreman about Shohei Ohtani and all that surrounds him, March Madness is underway, Griggs. And for the men's bracket, the ratings have been at an all-time high. So an average of 9 million viewers have tuned in to watch men's March Madness. We don't have the numbers for the women yet, but we know this. It is set up to be an all-timer as well. The Sweet 16 is going to include stars like Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers, Juju Watkins. You've got South Carolina in there, defending champ LSU in there. So if you're drawing this up for TV ratings for the women's bracket, all the stars have made the Sweet 16, and pretty much chalk for the men too. I know we love to talk about Cinderella, and it's fun to see Yale break through and, you know, some of these other teams, but at the end of the day, what drives the TV ratings are the recognizable names and the recognizable schools. And for both the men's bracket and the women's bracket, we've got that going forward. So again, I think it's a recipe for potentially record-setting ratings for CBS with the men and Turner, and then ESPN for the women.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of hoops. I mean, I've been flipping back and forth between the women's and the men's, and it's been exciting hoops and fun. And you know, it's a great time of year. It's fun when you can sit down at 9 a.m. and have basketball on, and then you can flip it around and get the multi-view going. And the women's tournament has been awesome. I love their angle, how they have some home games for the teams that have won. So you've got sold out Iowa, or even Oregon State sold out Gale Coliseum. I mean, the women are killing it, and their games are intense. Like, they are out there wrestling and fighting and you know, dropping the threes. And it's they've both been really fun tournaments. So I've been tuning in for sure.
Well, and everyone talks about Caitlin Clark, and it's well-deserved, right? But I think people forgot about Paige Beckers. Like, she's really good. If she wasn't hurt for most of the last 2 years, is she Caitlin Clark? I mean, she's really good at UConn. So, and what's really cool is, you know, we're on the West Coast, Griggs. A lot of people go to sleep early on the East Coast. This is kind of the introduction of the East Coast to Juju Watkins at USC, who may wind up being better than Caitlin Clark. We'll see. She's only a freshman. But, you know, this is someone who was identified by LeBron. This was someone who was identified by Nike. I mean, the biggest of the big saw her play in high school, and they were like, okay, she's next. Like, she's her. And she's living up to the billing so far. So I'm really excited as we advance, because, again, you've got two great teams like South Carolina and LSU. But then you have these individual stars like Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, and Juju Watkins, who on any given night can carry their team to victory single-handedly. It's been a really fun tourney so far. I will mention one thing, probably jinxing this. In the Sports Business Radio March Madness Challenge, yours truly sits atop the standings right now by himself. So I don't know how it happened. I mostly went chalk. So this, I guess, was the year to go chalk and pick the favorites. That's what I did mostly. I picked a few upsets early, but I'm sure I'll lose. I do have UConn winning it. So if UConn, you know, continues to play like they are, although Purdue, man, Purdue's been really good too. So it's going to be a fun last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about the athletes on the women's side. Same thing on the guys' side. Like, there's just some iconic players. I mean, you know, Zach Edey or whatever from Purdue, he's Goliath out there. I mean, you can't defend the guy, and 7'4", and he's just really good around the rim. And like you said, Purdue, I mean, I think they won like by 40 their last game. So Purdue is definitely clicking. But UConn, I think still has the edge. I mean, they just, as a team, just play so smooth together. But it's a fun tournament. I'm looking forward to the Sweet 16s.
All right. Coming up next, Keith Forman, co-founder of Sports Business Radio. He grew up a Dodgers fan. He knows Major League Baseball better than pretty much anyone I know. We've got some really interesting layers to peel back on this Shohei Ohtani story. We're going to try and do that next. And then Brett Rapkin, founder of Podium Pictures, will join us. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
There's nothing common about you. Not your talent, your drive, your achievements, or even your challenges. You need distinctive financial strategies that match your lifestyle and career trajectory. Morgan Stanley Global Sports and Entertainment was created to address your specific needs at every stage of your career and deliver the financial education and strategies you need to help advance your game plan. They speak the language. They know your business. Morgan Stanley will work with you to achieve your goals. I've trusted Morgan Stanley with my personal wealth management for almost 20 years. Visit Morgan Stanley at morganstanley.com/GSE. That's morganstanley.com/GSE.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
All right, whenever we talk Major League Baseball, or especially the Los Angeles Dodgers here on Sports Business Radio, I like to bring back co-founder of Sports Business Radio, Keith Forman. And this Shohei Ohtani story is one of the strangest stories I've heard of in a long time. Keith, thanks for popping on. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Yes, it is definitely a Dodger-worthy topic, isn't it?
It sure is. So let's lay some groundwork here for people that may be going, huh, what's going on here? So last Friday, Major League Baseball put out a statement, and it said, Major League Baseball has been gathering information since we learned about the allegations involving Shohei Ohtani and Ipe Mizrahi from the news media. Earlier today, our Department of Investigations began their formal process investigating the matter. Then on Monday, Ohtani had a press conference, and he said he has never bet on baseball or any sports. And here's the two other things we know. Gambling is illegal in the state of California. And Major League Baseball rule number 21D3 says any player, umpire, or club or league official or employee who places bets with illegal bookmakers or agents for illegal bookmakers shall be subject to such penalty as the commissioner deems appropriate. So those are the facts. Like, we know those things. And then, Keith, you and I are great friends. I don't have your bank information. You don't have my bank information. I'm pretty sure if I was going to send a wire to someone from your account, especially in $500,000 increments, I'm pretty sure some alarms would go off notifying you that I'm sending a $500,000 transfer from your account. So that's kind of the setup to this conversation, but give me your raw reaction to this story.
Okay, my raw reaction is that the first story that came out was the likely one. And I think most people have bought into that. And that first story simply being that Ipe and Shohei have been together for a long time. I think we've all learned that the interpreter role for an Asian baseball player is much more than just being an interpreter, right? I mean, you're helping train and educate and feed and clothe and drive and shop and do all these things for the player. It's a very servant role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you know, it's different. Me being your friend, I would not have your account, but me being your servant, maybe I would. And there's a trustworthiness and a dependency that I think might be at the heart of this thing.
So I've worked with pro athletes. You have too. And our mutual friend, Brian Grant, I worked with him for 12 years. Brian trusted me with anything and everything. If I was ever going to send money in this amount, I would have had to go to his financial advisor and say, we're going to activate a wire transfer. And there would have been all kinds of paperwork. And the first phone call that would have been made by this financial advisor would have been back to Brian saying, hey, Brian Grant, just want to give you the heads up. Brian Berger wants to transfer $500,000 from your account. Are we good? Right? Like, he wouldn't just take my word for the transfer. And I understand what you're saying, and everything you're saying is right. But if Shohei Ohtani doesn't have a few checks and balances and safeguards around the $700 million that he has, or, you know, is on the verge of having, this is a major problem. I mean, you know, you and I are old enough to remember Billy Joel losing his money to his financial advisor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar losing his money to his financial advisor.
Tim Duncan.
Right.
Britney Spears. The Beach Boys. Brian
Love.
No. Sorry. Anyway, that's a whole other story. But look, we could talk forever about people that have been swindled by people that they trust. That's an age-old story.
Mm-hmm. I'm not buying it. I mean, I just call me a skeptic, like you said.
Okay, I wasn't buying it either. And then I listened to the 13 or 12 minute statement today. And I don't think that statement would have been made if there wasn't proof. And the proof is going to come out in whatever the FBI and the IRS are investigating, right? They've got the receipts. So why would the Dodgers and baseball and Shohei extend the lie further with more cover-up? I mean, it's it's remarkable that ePay earned so many people's trust and snowed people for so long. That's a pretty remarkable story, right? I mean, did the Angels call him like the 26th man on their team?
Right.
I mean, this guy was beloved.
Yeah.
And trusted.
Most people have been shocked by this story. Would you say like that's an accurate? Anyone who knew ePay is pretty surprised by this story. Like, he seemed like a trustworthy inside the ropes character, right?
Sure.
So when you learn of this, again, which is more likely? And we don't know, and we'll find out, like you said, there's receipts on this. Which is more likely? That ePay accessed at least $4.5 million that we know of and sent it to a bookmaker without Shohei's knowledge, or Shohei either gambled himself or is bailing ePay out of a gambling debt. Like, it's one of those three things, right? Like,
if Shohei gambled himself, then I guess what I'm suggesting, if you're going to buy this story that came out today, is that he has all the confidence in the world that whatever the FBI has been investigating since 2017 and the IRS is looking at is going to vindicate him.
Here's another thing that cannot be argued, and I know you'll agree with me 100% on this. As the Major League Baseball season gets underway, this is horrible for Major League Baseball and the Dodgers, who have really gotten behind Shohei as one of the main faces of Major League Baseball. They don't want this story tied to the opening of the baseball season.
Agreed, of course. I mean, this is a PR disaster. Absolutely. But I actually don't think there's much left in the story now until there's some information that comes out from, you know, any of these investigations. And Major League Baseball has no interest in broadcasting the details of this investigation. Nor do the Dodgers. They're going to sweep this thing as far away as possible.
But what about the Feds?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is until that story comes out, this thing's just going to be put on the shelf. Also, my biggest question is, where's Ipay? Did he fly back from Korea to the United States? Because if he was aware of the amount of trouble that he's in, based on what we heard today, I probably would have bolted for another country somewhere deep, deep in the Asian part of the world. I don't know where, but
I wouldn't be coming back to the U.S.
I mean, why would he?
Right. That's a really good point, actually.
Where is he? And so that's the trial that would take place, right?
Yeah.
If he's truly, if he defrauded or stole from Shohei to the level that the story, you know, today has been told, then he's going to go to court and you have to go to jail.
Yeah, the two places here that I can't let Shohei Ohtani off the hook. One, for this amount of money to be stolen or spent without you having better checks and balances or alarms is it's inexcusable. Like, you got to get new people around you, right?
That's where I feel sorry for Shohei. It's embarrassing. It's, I mean, I would use the word ignorant.
You could financially illiterate,
naive. I mean, I don't want to say Shohei's a child, but he's obviously been depending on Ipe. You know, there's so many other people involved in Shohei's life, and you always hear terms like handlers and spokespeople and representatives, and I don't know who these people are, but where were they in this whole thing? It is hard to believe that, one, as long as Shohei and Ipe have been together, that Shohei was not aware of Ipe's gambling, apparently on any level, based on the statement today. But, you know, people are really good at keeping secrets and hiding stuff. So it's not impossible.
Okay, this is highly speculative, but it is in the realm of possibility. What happens in the worst case scenario here that, like you said, the feds go through all the documentation and it turns out that it was Shohei that was gambling?
Well, if he was gambling on baseball, then he's in big, big trouble. If he wasn't, then I don't know. What's the biggest penalty that can come of this?
Well, if he's gambling with a bookmaker in California, it's illegal. That's violating a law.
Okay.
If he was gambling on other sports other than baseball in another state, then, you know, where it's legal, then he's like any of us. But it's still not a good look.
Right. And according to the baseball law that you read off earlier, Manfred has a ton of, or the commissioner of baseball has a ton of leeway on how they would want to prosecute.
And you just hit the point here. Shohei Ohtani is the goose that lays the golden egg. Does Major League Baseball really want to punish the goose that lays the golden egg?
I don't think so, especially when they announced 2 days ago that the Dodgers will be opening the 2025 season in Japan.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so here's a side angle on this, and you and I talked about this off air a couple days ago. The media doesn't like to feel like you're trying to pull one over on them. And as a PR person, I think that's part of the reason for today's press conference versus just a statement from Ohtani. Like, you saw him sitting with the new interpreter at the press conference, and they're hoping that the look of transparency makes this story go away. But the LA Times is trying harder than ever to be relevant. ESPN reporter who broke this story feels like she's been lied to, because there have been several different versions of this story so far. They're not going to stop digging on this thing, and the feds are going to be digging. So I disagree with what you said earlier. Like, I think there's a lot of people that are going to continue to dig on this story.
They're going to get stonewalled. And that's, you know, look at the Dodgers have found themselves in this. They're their own worst enemy. Baseball and the Dodgers are their own worst enemy when it comes to stuff like this. Whether it was the Pride Night issue that the Dodgers bungled over and over again last year, or the Trevor Bauer situation, it's just I have a hard time believing that people are going to feel sorry for the media. I mean, I know that's not really what you're saying, but the media has gotten to a pretty obnoxious point of taking an image of Shohei and saying Shohei gambled in whatever form that media is. I mean, it's obnoxious, the level to which people want to believe something. And that's the problem with media in general. It's like everybody's got their belief system and they're going to finally tune into the channel that they want to get the reinforcement of what it is they've chosen to believe. This is a tough one to solve or to figure out based on the information that we've all been reading. I mean, you and I aren't experts. We're just regurgitating every single thing we've tried to find out there to figure out what's closest to the truth.
Well, we don't know what's happening, but I think we know, as we've outlined so far, here's what the rules are. Here's what the process will be. And it's going to be, you know, either Shohei loaned, gambled, or had stolen $4.5 million, at least that we know of. There may have been more. Now, who's the one person in all of this that has the incentive to sing like a canary?
Ipe.
Nope.
Who?
The bookmaker.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're telling me he doesn't have receipts?
Well, exactly. And you got to think Shohei has sat down with nothing but lawyers for the last 48 hours and been interrogated, right?
Unless they can't find him, like you said, because he's hidden in the depths of Asia.
In preparation of the statement that was made today, there were a lot of big time people charging a lot per hour that did a lot of questioning.
Yes, I agree with you.
But Brian, here's the bigger issue. You talked earlier about how this is a black eye for baseball, PR from a PR standpoint. Let's talk about the bigger issue that is coming out of this story as it relates to gambling and baseball. So what baseball is freaked out more than anything else about is not just Ipe and Shohei in this particular story. How many other Ipes are there right now in the form of clubhouse attendants and assistant coaches and trainers and underpaid, you know, front office staff people that have access to a lot of information within the sports organization? This is the part that freaks baseball out the most. And that's why you have the signs on the, you know, doorway or the entryway to every single clubhouse warning people about betting on baseball. And there's a real tightrope that baseball is walking as they drink from the sweet, sweet nectar of the DraftKings sponsorship revenue and promoting the gambling. And it's just comical. I mean, every story you've read on this, whether it's on The Athletic or on ESPN, you can't get through without, you know, some Bet ESPN or DraftKings blinking at you while you're reading, you know, the article. And everybody bets in sports. The players bet all the time using the DraftKings and doing their own, you know, March Madness pools in their fantasy baseball leagues. I mean, it is rampant. And so if Ipe, you know, got stuck in this situation and gambled poorly and got deeper and deeper into debt, I can't believe he's the only one.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I agree with your point about the hypocrisy / irony of being in bed with the sports gambling companies, yet, you know, you're trying to enforce the purity of the game so that the outcome of the game isn't influenced and someone can't change the outcome. I mean, I don't know if you saw the story about an hour ago that the NBA is investigating a two-way player on the Toronto Raptors for over-under prop bets and irregularities. And it's like, if we're getting to the point where two-way players are being investigated for over-under prop bets, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, there's a lot of people covering their tracks right now.
Yeah, and if they're not, they should be. And I think this sounds the alarm for all the sports leagues and even college sports. I mean, we saw this with, I believe it was University of Alabama's baseball team about a year ago. You make a great point that there are people who don't make a lot of money, like the attendants, or people who have access to proprietary information that could influence the outcome of the game at the very least. And they're the ones who are incentivized. Like, I think one of the most shocking things about this story, and again, in no way am I saying Shohei is guilty of this, but what's interesting, I mean, look, it's been well documented, Phil Mickelson's gambling. Like, the people, Charles Barkley, the people who have lots of money, they can do whatever they want with their money. But it's like, you already have a ton of money. Are you just doing this like to give yourself something to do on an afternoon while you're watching a game or while you're on the golf course? Like Michael Jordan, you know, a lot of people use this as like a competitive outlet, gambling. And the first thing I think of is, if I have $700 million, I'm probably not gambling. I'm probably, you know, spending my money some other way.
I'm not, I guess when I bring this whole issue up on gambling, it's more, I feel bad for, you know, the addiction that is gambling, and the really, you know, the people that really struggle with it, that aren't making hundreds and millions of dollars a year. And it's so gross what these mobile sites are doing. I mean, they're investing so much money in the leagues and the teams. They are, some of the activations I've seen, like I was at the Rose Bowl earlier this year, you know, for the New Year's Day, and you're just in the parking lot pre-funking before the game, and you had these representatives or these girls or young kids coming up to you, you know, giving you cards, you know, which are from DraftKings or FanDuel, saying, here's $500 in credit, you know, to open up your account and start betting. Can you imagine the cost per user or new sign-up cost per prospect if they're willing to give somebody 200 or 500 or whatever it was in credit?
Yeah.
I mean, think about the poison that this is.
Yeah, it is sad. It is sad. But, you know, like you said, all the leagues are doing this now. TV networks like ESPN are doing this. I mean, look, it's no secret that if you have a bet on a game, you're more likely to watch it on TV. So why wouldn't ESPN Bet exist, right? They want people to bet with ESPN Bet, and then they want to watch it on ESPN. So they win on every front. But this is a dangerous intersection of sports gambling and, you know, the purity of the game. And I just think it's interesting that, you know, the Shohei Ohtani story, he's such a high profile athlete. It shines a spotlight on all of this. And again, I think there will be, you know, many a reporter that are digging into this from various angles, but, you know, Major League Baseball just wants this story to go away as soon as possible, and the Dodgers.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, to me, the story, the legs for this story that will probably last the longest from this point on right now are, will the bookie talk, like you said? Where's Ipe? When does the FBI and the IRS information come out? And if Shohei struggles, people are going to start to question, you know, is all this going on in the background having an impact on that?
Yeah, that's a great point.
And if I can even, you know, turn this into a baseball conversation about the game itself. So it was interesting. If you go back and look at the timeline, last week when the Dodgers and Padres were playing their two-game Seoul series in Korea, the first game was on Wednesday. Second game was on Thursday. Apparently, baseball and the Dodger executives found out about this on Monday. So this is now swirling in the background Monday, Tuesday, going into the game Wednesday. Dodgers won the game on Wednesday, and then Yoshi, their new Japanese pitcher, pitched on Thursday after all of this went down in the clubhouse and everything. And he got shelled. Apparently he had the worst outing of his professional career, you know, that being mostly all in Japan. But, you know, it's not like, you know, Yoshi was the other big Japanese signee by the Dodgers. So he's as tight with Shohei, and I'm sure with Ipe, and was probably, you know, trying to make sense of all this, just like every other player. And so already you can see how this had an impact on his performance in that second game, you know, which was a real league game, as weird as that is. You know, Dodgers are 1-1, just like the Padres, before anyone else has played. So I don't know. It's just, we'll see. Everybody says, yeah, everybody will say the right things. Oh, we'll put it behind us. There's nothing to see here. Moving on. But time will tell.
If this was the last guy on the squad, this guy's probably gone already, right?
Last guy, what are you talking about?
If you're a non-superstar, if you're a no-name, you're a borderline major league, minor league, you're going back and forth. If there's any question about this going on of gambling with the bookie, and, you know, if I'm the Dodgers, I just waive this player, send him to the minors, get him out of my organization. But because it's a superstar, because it's one of the faces of baseball, obviously the Dodgers aren't going to do that. They've got 700 million reasons invested in him.
Yeah, I mean, Shohei gets a different set of rules, right? He doesn't even have to do press conferences or talk. How long did he not talk when he was signed by the Dodgers? You know, that's the other crazy thing, is this dude is so private. Nobody really, truly knows anything about this guy.
He was married, for God's sake, and we didn't know.
Yeah. All these Dodger fans who, you know, are defending him, which I guess I am too, but it's like nobody knows who he is. And we all live private lives. We all got our stuff, but I mean, I guess the story is so unbelievable, from the first story that came out to the switch story to now the deliberateness or confidence in the way the story was told today. I have a hard time believing that anybody at this point is going to double down on more lies and more cover up when the receipts are all out there.
Right. But we have seen people know that receipts are out there and they still, their ego gets in the way and they cover up. I'm not saying it's going to happen here. So, you know, you brought this up earlier in the conversation about the next steps here. You know, if you're the Dodgers, if you're Major League Baseball, like your holding statement is pending further investigation, right? Like you're not saying anything. It's pending further investigation.
We're not allowed to speak on the subject. Sorry.
Right. Lawyers are saying the same thing. I actually think the first next news we may hear is from the feds, who, again, they're not under the jurisdiction of Major League Baseball. They can do whatever they want.
What's motivating them to do anything?
Oh, the feds are motivated by lots of different things. I mean, you know, we've seen investigations in the past where, you know, if they feel like people are hiding information, they want to bury them and, you know, make a big deal of it. Bauko. Right.
And to that point, you know, why did the story come out when it did?
Yeah, it's very curious.
Why did this story break days before and then essentially the day of the Dodgers opening game in Korea?
What's your best guess?
I mean, is it the rest of baseball being pissed off that the Dodgers were allowed to sign this guy and defer, you know, 98% of his salary for 10 years? Is it, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel, doing something behind the scenes to try to expose illegal gambling? Is it, I mean, I'm just throwing crazy scenarios out there, right? Is it an FBI investigator that's frustrated that, you know, this investigation of the bookie wasn't going anywhere? I mean, that's they've been tracking that guy for how long? 7 years?
That's where I think it is. I think the feds have been tracking this bookie in California for a long time. They've been doing sting operation, and they've uncovered more and more and more. And you're in Southern California. It's the start of the baseball season. The prized free agent signing of all of baseball, Shohei Ohtani, is about to play his first game. What better time to get this story out there? Hey, LA Times, we don't even know that maybe the feds called the LA Times on their own instead of the LA Times uncovering this. And
I mean, somebody called somebody, right? And it's so funny. I mean, even Yasiel Puig got back in the news again. I thought we were done with Yasiel and the Dodgers.
No, my best guess is it's the Fed. And they wanted to get some pub for this operation on the bookie. And, you know how these things work, Keith. Like, okay, we're doing the sting operation on the bookie. And do other people come forward and go, oh, yeah, that guy was doing some shady stuff. I'm going to cooperate with the feds, give them further information. And now, you know, it makes their job a little easier because they've gotten information from the public or someone who knows this bookmaker. But again, if I'm, I hate to use this term, if I'm betting on one person who's going to turn this whole case upside down, I'm betting on the bookmaker because he has every, if they go to him and say, look, we'll cut a deal with you. We want all of your documentation. We want all of your receipts on all the bets that you took. And he can show this came from Otani's account and I had any correspondence with Otani at all, whether it's a text, an email, he signed off on this wire transfer from ePay, whatever it is. Now there's some really interesting information.
And that's what I'm saying is that, you know, if Shohei said what he said today in his statement, that, you know, that he had no clue any of this was going on, then he's basically saying that there's nothing out there.
Yeah,
because you're right. That dude would have it. This dude is a pretty shifty character, too. I read an article earlier about this guy. This is not his first foray into illicit stuff. He is, this guy is, he's been around the block.
Well, all I can say is this, anyone who's still operating as a bookmaker with the DraftKings and FanDuels of the world doing their thing, the ESPN bets, you've had a pretty healthy operation that could withhold the emergence of those, you know, very easy to use apps. So, you know, you may be dealing with high net worth individuals or people who, you know, don't want any trace, so they think, of, you know, I just placed a bet via my app on my phone. So, but remember, again, this is so important to point out. In California, it is illegal to gamble on sports. Many states around the U.S. have approved gambling. California is not one of them. So, you know, it is literally breaking the law in California to use a bookmaker.
Yeah, I mean, we can speculate on so many things. If this is all true, what happened today, that this was all a gigantic shock and, oh my God, I can't believe this happened to me, you know, that Shohei is saying, what's to say that he lost a lot more than $4.5 million?
Right. Yeah, I'd be checking the balances on my account immediately.
Right, because the other thing that's happened in the last 48 hours is people have been checking out the history of ePay. And of course, now apparently he didn't go to UC Riverside. And now, of course, he didn't apparently work for the Yankees or the Red Sox. And so if this guy has been pulling the wool over people's eyes for as long as he has, then damn, let's see what else he's done.
Well, one thing is for certain at the end of this story, we're going to either say we did not know ePay at all, or we did not know Shohei at all, or maybe we didn't know either of them at all.
Of course we don't. Yeah.
So, but it's a complete systematic failure of chain of command of managing someone with a high net worth finances. Again, if I spend $100 on my American Express, I'm getting an email or a text saying this was spent on your card. I would think, and I've done wire transfers before, and especially if someone else is going to do a wire transfer in another person's name, there are checks and balances and there's paperwork. This is not tapping a few buttons on your phone and sending $500,000 to Joe Bookie in California. So that's the part of this where I have a really hard time believing that the breakdown was this bad.
And the part I have the hardest time believing is that if these two, ePay and Shohei, were as like joined at the hip as they have been for as long as they have been. And all the articles you read about all the things that they did together, and ePay spent more time with Shohei than his family and his wife and on and on and on. I cannot believe that Shohei had no clue that ePay gambled, had a gambling addiction, or was in debt.
I agree.
even on the tiniest level.
Yeah. No, it's a mind-blowing story all the way around. And like you said, we're going to find out one way or another. All right, any final thoughts on this before I let you go?
Oh, man. My final thoughts are the Dodgers already put so much pressure on themselves to win this year when they went out and spent the amount of money that they did on Glasnow and Yoshi and Shohei, right? And as a fan, it's hard to be the fan of a team that's expected to win. It just kind of takes a little bit of the fun out of it. Now, you know, I'm still going to watch every night. I mean, how do you not watch that lineup night in, night out? But now you add this to what was already a ton of pressure on this team. And boy, the fact that the entire league, every other team has it out for you. It's just a lot to ask.
Well, here's one more final thought from me is Shohei Ohtani already has a ton of media following him, both from Japan and from across the United States. This guy's a national story. He's not just a Los Angeles, Southern California story. He may not be talking, but guess who's going to get asked about this story all year long? His teammates, Dave Roberts, the front office executives of the Dodgers. And again, they can lean back to, you know, no comment while this is under investigation. But at some point, they might actually get sick of being asked this question over and over. And if you're a new teammate and you're trying to endear yourself to the organization that's paying you $700 million that you just signed with, this probably isn't the best way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, if they go on a 2-week skid and, you know, start the year 12 and 14 or whatever, and lots of questions are being asked, someone's going to blow a gasket.
Yeah. All right. April 9th, Keith is going to be part of our Sports Business Radio 20th anniversary roundtable. 20 years of Sports Business Radio. Keith, can you believe it's been 20 years?
That's crazy.
That's crazy. I remember when we did the demo in a recording studio at Downstream to give to KXL Radio in Portland to let us do a 1-hour Sunday show that we, you know, they were just like, oh, yeah, it's Sunday at 11, just don't curse. And hopefully, you know, no one screws us up so badly that anyone calls us. But that was, it seems like a different lifetime ago.
Really, guys, you want to do a show about sports business? How many people are going to listen to that? And now look at, there's more airtime devoted to sports business than I think there is sports now.
Yeah. I mean, and this story that we've just discussed for the last 30 minutes is the perfect example of, you know, there's a lot more to sports now than there is just the X's and O's.
That's a great point. I mean, you could study this story from a PR perspective, from a legal perspective, from a financial perspective, gambling, all of it. This thing has got serious layers to it.
From a who's in your inner circle perspective.
Yes, from a psychology, relationship, all of it. It's crazy.
All right, Keith, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks on Sports Business Radio. Good luck to your Dodgers.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
5G is here. Is your stadium ready? From an immersive fan experience to efficient game day operations, 5G is transforming sports and entertainment. If you're ready to jumpstart your 5G transformation, look no further than Boingo Wireless. Boingo is one of the largest operators of indoor wireless networks in the U.S. They provide stadiums and arenas with state-of-the-art 5G networks and support teams across the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, and NCAA. I'm constantly interacting with sports executives, and the reason they love working with Boingo is because Boingo manages 5G and Wi-Fi networks end-to-end, offloading very stretched IT teams. Whether your stadium is looking to support mobile ticketing, cashless payment, or connected operations, Boingo has you covered. But don't just take it from me. Their customers include world-class venues like Soldier Field, State Farm Arena, Petco Park, and University of Louisville. Boingo in 5G. Now that's what I call a win-win. For a limited time, Boingo has a special offer for Sports Business Radio listeners. They're offering a free 5G assessment for your stadium or arena. To get started, simply email sbradio@boingo.com and mention this podcast. That's sbradio@boingo.com. Our thanks to Boingo for their continued support of Sports Business Radio.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
My guest is Brett Rapkin. He is the Emmy Award-winning founder of Podium Pictures. You can find them online at podiumpictures.com. Brett, thanks so much for joining me on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about your founder story. How did you start Podium Pictures? And maybe explain to our audience a little bit about what Podium Pictures does.
Sure. Well, the name Podium comes from one of the amazing experiences I've gotten to have was when I was hired by a production company that had done a deal with Outdoor Life Network that later became Versus to follow this up-and-coming ski racer around Europe during the 2004-2005 World Cup ski racing season. And his name was Bodie Miller, who became, you know, a household name in 2006 during the Torino Olympics, but this was the previous winter. And in that world, when you win a race, and you won a lot of them that winter, I was with him, you're on the podium. And I always love the double meaning of it, because it's when you win, you're on the podium, but also it's somewhere where people go to talk about, you know, the game or about issues they care about. So I think even back then, and that was like 20 years ago, I had the idea in my mind that doing projects that had some meaning to them was going to be important. But it wasn't until I did a project for NFL Network. I worked there for several years. In a typical week, I was jumping on a plane and flying to, you know, Seattle to interview Russell Wilson. And then 2 days later, it was on the air. I did that week in and week out, you know, jumping on flights with Michael Irvin, with his to-go fettuccine. You know, it was a lot of fun and learned a lot. We created a project called Game Changers, where it was NFL stars like Drew Brees getting together with entertainers like Harry Connick Jr. and going to places like the Musician's Village, which is a Habitat for Humanity post Katrina site in New Orleans. But it was really the project that we did with Michael Phelps called The Weight of Gold that kind of changed everything for me and for the company, which I'm happy to talk about.
Yeah, I saw The Weight of Gold on HBO. I actually had Gracie Gold, who's in that documentary, on this show to discuss it. Well done. Excellent documentary. Deals a lot with the mental health of Olympians and what they go through. So, you know, we're going to talk about dinners with DeMar in a minute, but you've worked with DeMar DeRozan, Michael Phelps, Steve Nash, Candace Parker, Michaela Schifrin, Carmelo Anthony, as you said, Bodie Miller. How do you get athletes to trust you to tell their story?
You know, I think it's just from, first of all, years and years of doing it. I mean, you get in the room with Tom Brady or a Michael Phelps, and you know, there's kind of an art and a science to it. And I think I've gotten really good at knowing when to push and when not to. And a lot of that, you know, the experience traveling with Bodie at the time, the show was called Bodie on the Bus, and it was called that because he lived in an RV. He had done a deal with this luxury RV company, and his buddy Jake would park the RV at the base of the race hill every week, and they'd live and party and, you know, sleep in there. And I had to go in there every week and convince this guy to, like, literally get out of bed and do an interview. And it was like walking into his bedroom. So it gave me a lot of good experience in just timing and just that, you know, kind of being a bit of an athlete whisperer. And, you know, I think that our track record and how long we've been doing in our relationships, certainly working with Phelps, I think gave us a lot of credibility. So many athletes look up to Michael because he was so dominant. We had 23 Olympic gold medals, 28 in total. But the next most gold medals in history, I think, is 6. So athletes like a Dwayne Wade or a Kobe Bryant, you know, they see that dominance and they want to meet Michael. They want to know what his secret sauce is. But now we've really, you know, established ourselves as being completely focused on impact. So if Candace Parker wants to make a Title IX documentary, you know, we're the only company that's saying we're going to make a great film, but how do you want it to change the world? Because that's just as important to us as telling a great story.
Yeah, there's so many storytelling platforms out there now. And it seems like, you know, your impact and, you know, dealing with mental health and you know, serious topics, that kind of separates you from other storytelling platforms. Is that what you're going for?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, with the weight of gold, we were really fortunate to work with HBO. And, you know, they got involved once we had basically a fine cut of the film. It was kind of in the top of the fourth quarter, and they came in and helped us bring it home, even despite, you know, we had to navigate COVID, because the plan was to put that film out during the July 2020 Olympics, which of course got postponed in the full year. But HBO still put it out in July 2020, which was great. I think kind of like The Last Dance, there was a kind of a, you know, people were looking for stuff to watch, and the film really, you know, really hit home. We're really proud of the results it got. I mean, certainly getting nominated for a Sports Emmy is great. Doing business with HBO is great, but it helped change the way that Team USA handles its mental health, because there was a need for it.
Absolutely. The difference between working with an HBO and Apple and Netflix or distributing things on your own, how do you come to that decision? I know that's a crazy process when you're dealing with the HBOs, Netflix, Apples of the world. There's a lot more people involved versus just, hey, we're going to put this out on YouTube or we're going to put this out on our own platforms. How do you decide? And you know, I imagine the athlete you're working with is also part of that decision.
Yeah. Well, we're fortunate that a lot of the funding for our projects is coming through a 501c3 nonprofit we set up called Podium Society. And it puts us in a really unique and you know, admirable position, which is that we don't have to worry about making money from the distribution of these projects. Everybody makes what they need to make from the budget, and then we can give it away for free, because we think ultimately if we want to make the biggest impact possible, especially with something like Dinners with Damar, where, you know, we're trying to reach the 19-year-old black kid in Compton or, you know, Detroit, putting it behind a paywall isn't the right fit. So we're really fortunate that we don't have to generate revenue from distribution. We're able to do free screening. We don't have to charge screening fees. You know, and even if it's on Netflix or HBO, people are still have to pay a monthly subscription. And, you know, a lot of people still don't have that, but everybody pretty much has YouTube. So we've done a lot of deals over the years where we did license the rights to an Amazon or an HBO. And so I've had the opportunity to really sit back and watch what they bring. And with a partner like HBO, I mean, they bring a lot. They bring a marketing team and they bring obviously a robust distribution channel and, you know, a lot of other things. And we do a round of meetings generally with those types of folks, the Netflix, HBO, Amazon, Apple. We have all those relationships. But, you know, we're just as happy self-distributing, and we've built the capabilities in-house to do the marketing, to make the poster, that handle the social media. And we've gotten really good at those things. So we have kind of two different bites at the apple with every project.
Well, and then I would imagine the athlete himself or herself, like they have their own channels, social media to get things out. So let's kind of do a case study here and dig in on Dinners with Damar. I've viewed the episodes. They're excellent. I know this week as we record this, a new episode with Damar and Damian Lillard is coming out. Dame has been on this show before. I think the world of him. I think he's such a thoughtful athlete. Damar has also sat down with Draymond Green, and Dwayne Wade, two very thoughtful, eloquent athletes. And I got to tell you, my main takeaway is I love how raw and real the conversations are. And, you know, I've talked about this on this show. As men, we're usually not as open with our mental health. You know, you got to be a tough guy, and, you know, you're not as tough if you talk about mental health. And I think the more we see these types of conversations with, you know, DeMar and guests, the more it becomes okay for people to open up about mental health. Would you agree?
No, absolutely. And you know, DeMar's a man who grew up in Compton, California, where there's even more stigma around talking about mental health than even for men in general. And I'm just so proud that we were able to, you know, connect with DeMar. It started with reaching out to the Spurs back when he was playing in San Antonio, and evolved to connecting with his team at Goodwin Sports, who are, you know, veteran sports agents and been with them his whole career. And I had a chance to get in the room with them at NBA Summer League a couple years ago. I was actually in Vegas interviewing Steve Kerr for a Lute Olson, Arizona, University of Arizona documentary we did. And yeah, I got to share the concept with DeMar, and it was, you know, look, instead of just doing the typical interview podcast, let's create a dinner format, dinners with DeMar, where it's more of a conversation. You know, all the pressure is on you to have to just ask questions, and you can ask questions, but also the guests can ask you questions, and it's a dialogue. And he liked the concept, and thanks to a couple of family foundations, we were able to, you know, put it together. So then it comes to the distribution, right? I mean, what are we gonna do with this thing? And at the end of the day, we decided there was no more authentic way of doing it than having it directly on DeMar's YouTube channel. We didn't know necessarily what the media pickup would be, because the media landscape's gotten so segmented and crazy. But what we've been thrilled to find out is that it hasn't stopped anybody from USA Today to ESPN to you name it from wanting to cover the project. So we're really inspired by that, because again, you know, having the option of being able to put something out on YouTube is wonderful for the work we're trying to do, because of the impact it can make and how many people utilize YouTube. It's billions of people. I think Netflix has something like 250 million. So it's in its own league in terms of just distribution and audience.
Yeah, I saw that first episode with Draymond is up. I think it's over 375,000 views now. So, I mean, you can see how many people are viewing it, whereas on the streaming platform, sometimes you don't get those numbers. But, you know, with DeMar, it sounds like you discussed that a dinner format would be the most comfortable format for him. But, you know, when you sit down to tape this, how long is it taking? Are there multiple takes? Do you just basically let the camera roll for the course of the dinner? It seems very organic.
No, it is. And that's who DeMar is, you know, and I think that comes through. And I mean, just seeing some of the comments on social media and on YouTube, I mean, there's people talking about, like, you know, DeMar, you're the reason I'm still here. You know, talk about, I mean, we're always looking, you know, we're very data driven, and the amount of impressions and the audience that these things reach is obviously a huge data point. But with something like this, I mean, if you save one life, then
right,
obviously it was worth all the effort. But no, I mean, DeMar was very specific about who he wanted to have on. I mean, there's some big names that I could share that, you know, just didn't make the cut. He wanted to have people he had a relationship with. He goes back a long way with Draymond. They're the same draft class. They played against each other in the NCAA tournament. DeMar was at USC and Draymond was at Michigan State. And they're really good friends, as you see in the episode. Dwayne is actually DeMar's next door neighbor here in LA. They actually share a fence. So
I know, I saw that. I had no idea that they were next door neighbors, but when you're watching the episode, I mean, it's really funny. And then the coolest thing is that, you know, it's no secret that DeMar idolized Kobe. But D. Wade was like number two on that list. So for the two of them to be able to sit down and have this very adult, deep conversation and their next door neighbors, that was pretty funny.
No, for sure. I mean, Dwayne is just such an impressive individual, and you know, we're so grateful he was willing to take the time to do it. And there's definitely kind of a, I'd say it's more like a big brother, little brother dynamic between those two gentlemen. You know, I left the part where DeMar asks him about being away from his family, because I know that's obviously tough. And, you know, DeMar is based here in LA, but he's obviously playing for the Bulls. So to hear, you know, Dwayne talk about how he handled that, which was that he made a decision that while he was active in his NBA career, you know, he was going to be putting all he had into that, but he knew that there was going to be a day where his family would come first. And that's now where Dwayne is. Just things like that. You know, I think that DeMar got to ask him some things and vice versa that I think they both found beneficial. And then with Lillard, they share an agent at Goodwin Sports. So they're also very close. And we were able to, because everything going on with Dame over the summer, with not knowing where he was going to be, and things happened pretty fast with them going to Milwaukee, combined with some, you know, personal challenges he's been going through. Fortunately, we were able to find an evening before Bucks played in Chicago. We were able to get a private thing at Mastro's Steakhouse and get them together, and it was great.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you shooting these as one-offs? Did you shoot them, you know, in a row? I would imagine for someone like DeMar, it would be pretty taxing if you shot, you know, all of them in a day or two versus, you know, some space and time in between the episodes. And then also, how many episodes are there going to be here in this first season?
Yeah, so I think this, the Lillard episode that comes out this week is kind of the completion of what we might call season one, but we see it as an ongoing thing. You know, everybody wants to do more. We think the summer is our sweet spot to shoot more episodes. And then we like the All-Star break as a chance to start promoting them because DeMar's got the bandwidth to do it. But we're hoping this goes on for a long time. Everybody's incredibly, you know, happily surprised with the feedback and the impact it's making. And, you know, we have people reaching out to us and to DeMar asking to be part of it. And we think we've really created a platform and sky's the limit for where it can go.
I would imagine in what you do, you know, again, there's a lot of storytelling platforms out there. Access is the most important thing. And then coming up with unique stories and unique conversations is probably the second most important thing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, access is obviously huge. And I've been fortunate to be in some pretty unique rooms over the last 20 years, both, you know, professionally and then just personally. I mean, I was at a restaurant Sunday night with my family and LeBron and Anthony Davis showed up. I mean, maybe it's just living in LA, but I've been very fortunate. In terms of the conversations, I think it's great to be in a place where but there's a ton of basketball podcasts. But Dinners with DeMar, they don't talk about basketball. They talk about kind of everything else. And yes, mental health is a huge component of it. It's the foundational component, but I mean, mental health is related to everything. It's related to sleep and diet, family, and how to navigate all these different things. So yeah, I think that these athletes and now a lot of these foundations who, you know, we feel like we can really add rocket fuel to the missions of a lot of those foundations because of, you know, the powerful cultural cachet these athletes have. And one thing with Dinners with DeMar, you know, these first three episodes are all with other African-American men, other NBA players. We want to branch out. We're going to branch out. But something that's really dawned on me is just the cultural influence that a DeMar or a Dwayne Wade or a Dame or a Draymond, a lot of D's, that they have. I mean, I'm a white guy from the suburbs of LA and I'm wearing Jordans. You know, I mean, these guys really are culturally the most influential guys, certainly in American sports. I don't think there's a few guys in the NFL and there's a couple of guys in Major League Baseball. I mean, Shohei Ohtani just got a $700 million deal. I'm not sure what his cultural relevance is yet. We're going to find out this season. We're happy to have him on the Dodgers. But these NBA guys drive the culture. And if they drive the culture when it comes to style, why not drive the culture when it comes to mental health?
If there's an athlete, an agent, a team listening to this, and they want to work with you on a project, what's the best way for people to approach you on said idea?
Yeah, absolutely. And not just athletes and teams, but also we want to hear from philanthropists and leaders of foundations who, you know, are ready to explore storytelling, especially partnering with athletes or other influential people. I mean, Dwayne Wade has 20 million Instagram followers. You know, we estimate a few million people have seen the content that we did on his channels. So we just were able to create not just incredible reach, but also this content that has incredible emotional appeal that can change hearts and change minds and change behaviors and change structures. So we want to talk to philanthropists as well, because we love matchmaking. But I'm happy to give out like personal email. It's Brett@podiumpictures.com. And, you know, we're glad to get on the phone and talk about what we do and see if we can add rocket fuel. Where I've gotten a chance over the years to do a lot of things that kind of I felt like doing. I got to make a stoner baseball movie with Josh Duhamel called Space about Bill Lee. I got to make a documentary about Bill Lee in Cuba. And then I got to make a feature film about Bill Lee with Josh Duhamel from Transformers and Sterling K. Brown before he kind of blew up on This Is Us, playing Rodney Scott, the second baseman for the Montreal Expos. Point being, I've gotten to do a lot of things that I felt inspired to do for my own creativity. And I still love being creative, but now I'm a father and I'm seeing firsthand what these projects can do to help other people. And so myself and my team at Podium are very focused on helping other people tell stories and being service oriented at this point.
Yeah. What's your background? Did you go to film school? Like, how did you get into this originally?
I grew up in Los Angeles. I'm a rare LA native, as I put it. I went to high school in the San Fernando Valley. I played baseball there at a pretty high level. At least some of the guys I played against were at a high level. Like, managed to make varsity. I was okay. My brother, who was a few years younger, one of his high school teammates was Ryan Braun, became National League MVP on the Brewers, of course. And I went to the University of Arizona. They won the national championship my freshman year with Mike Bibby and that team. So sports has always been in my blood. My great-grandfather was a Hollywood screenwriter, but you know, nobody else really worked in the business. And made my Spaceman Bill Lee documentary when I was 23. I had read that this really fascinating former Major League pitcher who had started Game 7 in the 75-World Series and, in his view, gotten blacklisted, was still playing at 57 years old at the time. And so we went to Cuba with him, and that kind of launched my career. I've gotten to do a lot of fun stuff and been working for a lot of clients from ESPN to NFL to HBO. But these days, just really focused and finding a lot of meaning and, you know, being telling these impact-driven stories, working with a lot of athletes and other influencers, and again, helping these philanthropists and foundations to add rocket fuel to what they're doing.
What advice would you have for students who are listening to this and they're contemplating getting into the storytelling business?
That's easy. It's just, you got to be incredibly self-reliant. You got to bet on yourself every single day. You need to be a producer. I remember one day I was walking down the street. I lived in Santa Monica, and I started talking to this guy outside like a music studio, and he said he was a producer. And I'm like, how do you become a producer? And he said, start telling people you're a producer. That's what it is. You know, I think that I was guilty, like a lot of people, of thinking there was this magical producer who was going to come along and make all my dreams come true. And it just doesn't work that way. And maybe if you're Christopher Nolan, you know, that starts to happen for you. But, you know, his producer is his wife. So, I mean, you know, that's a whole different thing. But no, you got to make it happen for yourself. You got to find the funding. if you find the funding, you can hire yourself to do whatever you want. I mean, a lot of the directing jobs I got early on, including getting to direct Josh Duhamel and Sterling K. Brown and Ernie Hudson and Ghostbusters, was because I raised the funding and I hired myself to direct it. So bet on yourself and be self-reliant and don't expect anybody else to make it happen for you.
How do you raise the funding? Because it's not easy to get people to separate with their money. I mean, when you're going in to pitch someone, what's the vision that you're trying to get them to see?
I mean, we've evolved to it's about the impact. I mean, now we're able to, because we have this 501c3 nonprofit, that we don't take on investors for our projects. It has to be a donation. Because if I take on an investment, then, and we've had investors on past projects, and it's just really, it's like going to Vegas. I mean, sometimes you could win Sundance and you could get, you know, a huge deal, but the odds are you're not going to. But with this model, it's about getting a tax deduction and getting your name on something and being involved with something that is going to move your mission forward. And that could be, you know, there was a family that supported the Lou Olson Arizona basketball documentary because they're Arizona basketball boosters and they wanted to honor Lou Olson's legacy. Or it could be mental health, or it could be Title IX. I'd encourage people, when they're looking for the money, to not make it about the money and find people who aren't just doing it as a financial investment. Because the odds are, if they bring it to their financial advisor and they put it up against other investments like the stock market, real estate, et cetera, there's a lot of risk there. But the way we're doing it, we've taken all the risk out of the equation.
Brett Rapkin, the Emmy award-winning founder of Podium Pictures. Find them online at podiumpictures.com. Thanks so much for joining me on Sports Business Radio. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Look forward to talking again.
Yes, absolutely. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. Hey everyone, Brian Berger here. I love innovation and I love tech. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about what MatSing is doing. You may have a solid wireless network at your venue, but do you have the highest performing antennas in the world to power your network? MatSing is the leader in multi-beam lens antennas. Venues such as AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys, Allegiant Stadium, which is home of the Las Vegas Raiders and Super Bowl 58, and Amalie Arena, which is home of the Tampa Bay Lightning, all have MatSing's innovative lens antennas. As a matter of fact, MatSing's antennas are deployed at over 100 venues globally, including 50% of NFL venues, 35% of NBA and NHL venues, several Formula One racetracks, and even at the upcoming 2024 Paris Olympics. Do you want to deliver a fully connected venue experience to your fans? Then MatSing is the key to delivering a best-in-class mobile experience for fans who want to post pictures, watch videos, order food, or place real-time wagers. For more information on how MatSing can help your venue, visit MatSing.com. That's MatSing.com. Or email Tracy Salazar at TracySalazar at MatSing.com. That's Tracy Salazar at MatSing.com. MatSing is the exclusive antenna partner of Sports Business Radio. Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to the Sports Business Radio team, Brian Griggs, Nicole Wardle, and Josh Blank. A reminder to kindly subscribe to our award-winning podcast. Our feed features 20 years of podcasts with the biggest names in sports and business. Go to Apple or Spotify Podcasts and click on the plus sign in the upper right-hand corner. That way, every episode of Sports Business Radio will be delivered to your listening device each week. We'd love to have you give us a 5-star rating and write a review of our podcast as well. It'll take you just 2 minutes. I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
Follow Sports Business Radio on Facebook, X at SB Radio, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and online at sportsbusinessradio.com. SBR is produced by Brian Griggs at GriggsProductions.com.